Ahoy, Vachon. As the French say, Vachon. This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Those are the dulcet tones of our founder and mentor, Brian Brown, who founded the Brown Briefly, about 5 years ago now. So, and Brian is still with us, not if in body, at least in spirit, as we meet with you weekly to sort of talk about the events on Vachon, the state of Washington, the United States, and the world. So let's do a quick check-in and then see what your Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, Festivus plans are. Truman, why don't you start off? Truman O'Brien, you know, our treetop pilot and director of our airways here at Voice of Vachon. Truman, what are you up to?
I'm very glad that you threw in Festivus as well. Festivus for the rest of us. That cracks me up every time I hear it. I love it. I just love it. Well, I'm totally frustrated. I have my airplane down in Oregon getting some avionics work done on it, and it's all finished, and now I need to go get it, but the darn weather is just not cooperating. So I'm kind of stuck up here waiting on to get my airplane back, and I can't get it. So that's my frustration. There you go.
Life is hard.
It's tough, I'm telling you.
So, Gail Kellner, what's up in your world?
Morning. Well, today is, in my family, the big holiday is today because it's solstice. So, winter solstice today, marking the turn back towards the light. So, we'll have a fire this evening with the family and, you know, share a little gift exchange and some vegan chili, and it should be quite a fun evening. It's the big one that we celebrate in my immediate family, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Should be good. Also tonight, the Karen Bondo and her elves are out setting out luminaries somewhere on the island. You have to discover where. So one of those island treasures, every solstice, these luminaries appear somewhere on the island, and you get to do a candlelit luminary walk. So tap into your sources and discover where it is and go out and enjoy a stroll in the late afternoon, early evening, which is about 4:30.
I was going to say, it's not all that late, you know.
Yeah, right. It goes down, I believe, at 4:21.
Oh my God.
Exactly. Don't remind us, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Kevin Jones, what's up with you?
Well, you know, I was thinking that we talked about the Orca Watch the other week, and maybe we need the Luminary Watch now to come on and tip us off so we reduce those hydrocarbons spent driving around looking for luminaries on Vachon. And Truman, I like the idea of Bruce's introduction of your flying, and gives new meaning to the word tree hugger, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was hugging a couple of trees, no doubt about it. And the bad news is, I broke the tops out of a bunch of them. So,
yes, yeah. Well, they still stand. So that's to
that
the good.
True.
We just, you know, really enjoyed the fact that we had some snow the other day, and Susie is glad that it's staying put at the higher elevations and not on Vachon, which is I enjoy it either way. You know, we got a little bit of remodeling project going on, which I really expected to have, you know, wrapped up like a month ago. So I'm learning all kinds of, you know, when can you actually paint in the late fall, and what are the humidity and temperature conditions that allow the paint to dry before the next rainstorm comes in? So, yeah, you know, a little progress and learn
Yeah, the rule of thumb is all painting happens, you know, by the 15th of September.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I'm setting up a paint shop. My guest bathroom has somehow become a paint shop when it's too cold to use the garage. But yeah, paint inside and move the stuff outside when it's dry, which takes a little longer, you know, of course, this time of year.
It'll be dry. Don't worry. It'll be dry by June.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, my fingers crossed you can see this.
So, and I'm Bruce Holman, a resident of Ellisport, and enjoying these incredible high and low tides this time of year. I was out late last night, almost at midnight, and it was a very low tide. So the beach is exposed, the sand spit at KVI Beach is exposed. And then early this morning, you know, the whole beach was flooded again. So it's very fascinating to watch that sort of ebb and flow of the tides. And then in the summertime, it's reversed. You know, it's low in the middle of the day, it's high in the middle of the night. So it's just one of those sort of end of the year kind of reflections that we are in this cyclical process. And as Gail mentioned, you know, we are turning back to the light. It's very slow turning back.
Very slow.
And actually for the Northwest, it's interesting. The days get longer, but they stay darker earlier because it gets light earlier, but it gets dark earlier. So the days are getting longer, but for those of us who are normal people, they don't seem like it until you get to February or March, and then you begin to notice that they're really getting longer. So what's going on around Vashon with you guys? Kevin?
You know, Bruce, I just wanted to actually reflect on what you said about the low tides and KVI Beach and the nighttime. And of course, the full moon is out now and drives those tides. The thought that comes to mind is just the magical opportunity on a clear night with a full moon with the low tide. And I don't know if you've had that experience or not. I assume you have. It sounds like it would be fascinating.
It is. Yeah, Gail.
Yeah, just being a longtime Islander and beachcomber, it is one of it's a fabulous thing to go out and do is walk at night on these low tides. And a lot of people don't realize the tides are low, you know, because we're just not outside. Most of us aren't outside at night. Or, you know, I live in a house you have to walk to. So anytime I go anywhere, I know what's happening in the weather and the tides. And so it has its inconveniences, but overall, I love it a great deal because it gets me outside at night. It gets me out walking on the beaches, even at nighttime. So, yeah.
Truman.
Yeah. I just have two quick things, talking about the tides. You know, years ago I used to, haul fish off of a beach up in Bristol Bay. Mm-hmm. And, we used to just land on the beach and I have a tide table and I think I've mentioned this before, but it was very shallow there. And so consequently, when the tide came in, it came in just amazingly fast. I mean, and went out the same way because of that shallowness. And it was always just astounding to watch. You could actually see waves from the tide coming in. Just really impressive. Mm-hmm. And the second thing, talking about length of daylight, of course, I was based in Anchorage for 4 years. So, you know, the daylight up there is a little different. The thing that's interesting, though, is that As the days get longer, they get longer much more rapidly in Anchorage than they do here, of course. I mean, from day to day, each day it'll gain several minutes, where down here it's only a minute or two. Up there it's a lot. So, and there's that point somewhere in February, March, where we get about the same time, length of time. But anyway, that's always fascinating to see.
Going to add, you know, we said we covered local, state, national, international, but also galactic news, or at least solar system news. Kind of interesting to note that not all planets have, I mean, the reason that we, not all planets have seasons like we do, and not all planets experience this, because it has to do with the fact, of course, that the Earth's axis is tilted, and as we move around the sun, different sides of the Earth are more exposed or less exposed to the light. And it was it's interesting to think, I read an interesting article in the New York Times that had we, without that tilt, it's very possible that we might not have life on our planet, because it does allow this interesting balance to happen of a certain amount of light and a certain amount of darkness, whereas other planets, some of them sit completely on their side practically and just whirl with only one end facing the sun, or they are tilted in such a fashion and move so slowly around the sun that it's decades and decades that before they would experience a season. So we're really fortunate in so many ways. And another reason to take care of this beautiful planet, it is the only one we have.
I have one more quick story about tide and daylight and all. Many years ago, I was in Panama and I was having dinner with an attorney. And he's from a very well-known family. I mean, he has relatives who is the president. And I mean, you know, this is a big time. These are people who are well-traveled and really smart people. And my friend and I are talking about the summers in Alaska, how we could, you know, fly, you know, oh gosh, around the clock practically, because it was light all the time. And he kind of laughed, but it was obvious that he thought we were kidding. And we say, now he's from Panama, you know, it's very close to the equator. And there, sun comes up at 6, goes down at 6 every day of the year. It hardly changes. And and when we explained that, he said, no, that doesn't happen. He was not aware that that happened. And he couldn't grasp the concept. So I told him to get the waitress to bring us an orange and a flashlight.
And when
when she brought me that, I did the tilt, you know, and showed him how that worked. He was fascinated. But I find that really interesting that somebody from that part of the world would not be aware of that. So anyway.
Mm-hmm. Our lived experience does limit us, right, to indeed, a certain worldview.
Indeed.
So true, Kevin.
So Kevin, you had something to add?
Oh, I was just still mulling over the notion of moonlight walks, and I'll just share the most magical of those for me. A friend of mine who was a decade or so ago now, who was a 30-something, and I went up to Mount Rainier and dug a snow cave, and we overnighted in the snow cave, and the time of year that we picked was phenomenal in that it was in the winter, of course, with snow on Mount Rainier. It was probably February. And we had, it turned out to be a clear sunny day that we went in, and a full moon at night. And the weather was cloudless for the entire time we were there, which made it, of course, quite cold. And so I told him that, you know, when, as we're digging the snow cave, I said, you know, that you're gonna experience this amazing thing when the moon comes up. And he's like, ah, yeah, what, right, whatever. Let's dig this thing and get to bed, right? So, and have some dinner. I'm hungry. So it's like, okay, cool. You know, see what happens. So we have dinner. We hit the sack, and like an hour later, he says, Kevin, we got to get up. And I said, what do you mean? We got to come out here. Look at what's going on. And I said, okay, moon's got to be up by now. And it on snow in the moonlight, if you've never experienced that, it is just transformative, right? And so we were like for an hour, then we're walking around and you can see everything so clearly, and the shadows are just intriguing. The other thing is, in the next morning, it had been so cold overnight that there was hoarfrost, which basically means that the snow creates crystals on its surface and they actually raise up in little planes. And as we get up in the morning to head back to the car, it's like a field of diamonds.
Oh, wow.
Reflecting the sunshine back at us. And it was just such an amazing coincidence of all of those different factors within a 24-hour period that would be hard to ever recreate. And I look back on it fondly.
Yep.
Interesting. Yep. Yep.
There's a similar kind of thing in the summer when you do a beach walk in the late summer, the bioluminescence, just every step you take when you put your hand in the water, you know, I mean, you know, as the waves are lapping, I mean, it's just when the blooms are out and when the bioluminescence organisms are really dense, It is just magic. It's the same kind of magic in the water that you experience. Even this magnificent sort of joyous place we call Earth, thank goodness.
Yes.
And as Gail pointed out, we do need to take care of it so we can experience these things. And so our kids and grandkids and their grandkids can experience it. That's for sure. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about Bashan news. So an outbreak of Omicron on Bashan, wrestling tournament off island. I think 10 young people came back from that tournament infected with COVID. Half seemed to be Omicron. They spent a couple days in the high school, and so 250, half of the high school students have been exposed. They're testing those. So what does that kind of thing mean for Vashon? And what does Omicron mean for Vashon? The great silence.
Yeah.
Well, we're kind of dumbfounded, to be perfectly honest. You know.
Yeah, some of the statistics I've been reading are pretty astounding. Omicron was 1% of outbreaks in the United States on the 1st of December. It's now 75% of breakouts. So, yeah, I think it's a serious situation. Fortunately, we have a little more to bring to it than we did last winter, but I don't believe we'll go through the shutdowns that we did before, but we're going to probably have to do some personal limiting of our exposure. And it concerns me that only about a third of United States adults are fully vaccinated, and that may have repercussions in the coming few months. Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, you know, I think we need to keep telling the stories, and not just those who are listening today to hear the stories, but to pass the stories on, right? Because, you know, whatever it takes to get people to get vaccinated and make that conscious decision to protect their health and the health of others, I think is really important. Yeah, the statistics are shocking, right, about how quickly Omicron is progressing. And of course, the disease can mutate faster than the pharmaceuticals can find solutions, right? Even though it's amazingly fast with the vaccines that we have, the viruses are faster. There's another local story in the state of Washington. State Senator Doug Erickson has passed away. It was announced a couple of days ago. Who caught COVID in, I think El Salvador, and was airlifted to Florida, was on a ventilator for I don't know how many days, and has now died. It's serious. And while there's, of course, a lot of conservative doctrine that is anti-mask and anti-vaccine, and we hear that all the time, Republican Senator Erickson says it's pretty hard these days to live by some of those doctrines because they can be fatal. So I'd say just do everything you can to convince those around you and yourself, if you haven't been vaccinated, this is the step we need to take.
Last night I saw, I think it was a doctor speaking to the legislature. I think it was in Indiana. I'm trying to remember. But he was talking to them saying, they were trying to pass an anti-mandate, not allowing a mandate for masks to go forward. And he spoke, boy, really fervently saying, look, we are all beat. We're tired. We've had it with this. And the only way we're going to get by this is to get everyone vaccinated and get everyone masked. And let's get over this thing. So I think, I don't know. What we have to say to people to get them to get the idea, Some folks just have this idea that it's a bad thing to do, and I don't know how to convince them otherwise.
But, so unfortunately it became a political issue instead of a health issue.
Yeah.
I think there alone lies the root of the problem.
There's
and
no
it
question.
Remains a political
no question.
Issue. Yeah. And so we don't respond to it as a public health issue. We're responding to it as a political issue. So I share your frustration with that, Truman. And I know that many hospitals are now, especially in the Northeast, I've been reading, their hospital staff are also getting sick. So not only are they overwhelmed with numbers that they haven't seen since last winter, or right up there or above those numbers, but they now don't have the staff. Their own staff are falling sick.
You know, make just, go ahead. No, you know what? I just get so angry. I think, you know, the hospital just should say, oh, are you vaccinated? No. Okay, then you don't come in. You know, you go somewhere else. Go out and die at home, because we're not going to take care of you. I mean, you know, they can't do that, but boy, that's what you think they ought to be doing. Just to make it really clear, you know, if you're not going to get vaccinated, you're probably going to die from this stuff, you know, just... And go home. Go do it at home. Don't keep us busy, you know.
Yeah. Well, as the Surgeon General said, it's you know, it's an epidemic of the unvaccinated,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. It was a fascinating article in, I think, in the New York Times just yesterday. There was a reprint of an article that they'd done about a year ago and then updated about when do pandemics end. And pandemics end really when people decide they're over. It's a social, political decision, not a medical decision, because pandemics continue to rage. You know, you look back at the Black Death, you look at Ebola, you look at the flu pandemic of 1918. In effect, people just get tired of the problem and the restrictions, and decide we're going to go back to normal. Well, diseases don't decide to go back to normal. They continue to sort of rage until they mutate out of existence, or mutate in a way that they become less deadly. I mean, it's sort of the nature of viruses. They change their toxicity so that they don't kill their host. And so, I mean, lots of records of when diseases were introduced to Europe from the New World, you know, during the age of exploration, of these virulent diseases that came back to Europe, and that Europe brought to the Americas. And they killed people in a matter of days or hours. And then gradually the viruses or the bacteria realize, hey, we're killing the people that we depend on to live. And so they slow down. So they become less virulent. They become less deadly. And that just happens naturally. But do we have time for that to take place?
Yeah, well, Truman. One of the things about Ebola, in fact, one of the reasons that we don't have huge outbreaks of Ebola is for that very reason. They kill so rapidly that they don't give the person a chance to spread it. So if you get Ebola, you're dead shortly, and so you don't have a lot of contact with a lot of people.
Gail.
Oh, I was just going to add, of course, at least my thinking and understanding isn't that the virus is thinking consciously about killing or not killing its host, but it's a Darwinian aspect taking hold here, in which that the virus is only able to spread if it doesn't kill the host.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Kevin.
I did want to just go back to the social, you know, the fact that we're all in community, to Truman's point, right, about the fact that we have to behave with some responsibility. And that goes right to fiscal responsibility, not spending beyond our means. They do have bankruptcies in this country. You know, you can get out of jail free, sort of free cards for certain things where people may not be acting as responsibly as maybe they could or should be. But yeah, Truman, you know, we hate the notion of thinking that, you know, people are going to be sort of left out in the cold to expire with this disease. But the social contract, right, that's being violated is maddening in so many cases, and people being put through really really negative consequences. The caregivers, who just not only the physical demands that are placed on them, but the emotional consequences of the people they're chartered to care for, who have a disease that really is that they're not going to survive in so many cases. Fewer now these days, right? But I just see the social contract. If I'm channeling Lynn, I may be able to see her here. But I think it's an important thing to say, and I definitely align with the concern that you share. And people need to recognize that that we're here together, and should be working to be supportive of each other in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I think you're right, Kevin. It is the social contract, and you know, it's the whole idea of governments are structured among people to accomplish certain kinds of things. And you know, we may disagree on what those things are, but we need to all adhere to that fundamental social contract. And that's what we see at risk right now with the January 6th sort of inquiry. You know, there are people in the community who do not see the values of democracy in the way that many of us see it. So it's going to be interesting times. Sticking with Vashon, though, let's ask about the ferry crisis. We don't hear about it very often, except in the text we get almost daily about changes in the schedule. But are the problems the ferry system having? They're going to be with us for a while. Are they going to affect life on Vashon?
Well, I think they do already. I mean, the whole tempo of our existence here on the island is regulated by the ferry system, whether we like it or not. I mean, somebody comes to visit from off island, and the first thing you ask them is, what time you plan on going home? You know, I mean, you know, and people are usually a little offended by that, but you know, it's true. You know, they come, hey, how you doing? Hey, what time you going home? You know, it's like, but you know,
you want to get home by 9, maybe you need to leave by 7.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe you better eat and run, you know, I mean. So.
You're much more blunt than the rest of
us. maybe.
Kevin.
You know, I can't remember what the event was that caused people to. We had a ferry disruption a couple years ago, it seemed, and boy, you know, I'm losing the recollection of what it was. But a lot of people ended up, you know, finding alternatives, transportation alternatives, carpooling, you know, reducing the number of cars that went on the boats. And I remember at the time it was, maybe this will cause people to change their behaviors, because we know that there's a lot of cars on those boats, that there's one person in the car, and wow, that's an awful lot of space to consume on a limited resource like that. Well, of course, you know, I suspect that we're probably falling back into our conventional means, but it does seem like if there was the conscious will that we could find solutions to minimize the number of cars on the ferry boats and still move all the same number of people. But that doesn't seem to be happening on its own. Maybe if we were honeybees, we'd figure it out. But
well, honeybees are no doubt smarter than we are, I'm pretty sure, at least when it comes to social order. But I did see something I'd never seen before this last weekend, where a ferry arrived from Fauntleroy onto Vashon. And the cars immediately went from the ferry in a little U-turn onto a ferry that docked alongside it. Have any of you seen that?
Yeah.
It was the ferry going on to Southworth. And that's the first time I've seen that particular arrangement. So they brought cars going to Southworth onto Vashon, just did a little U-turn onto the next ferry that was heading on to Southworth, and it allowed more cars to leave Vashon and them to go directly back to Southworth. So it did seem rather clever, if a little clunky in a few cases of big trucks. So it was interesting to see, you know, how we've dealt with that. And at least one innovative answer to trying to at least make the most out of the room we do have on the ferry.
You know, the one thing that does strike me, though, is when we had our ferry committee that was working so diligently on the Triangle Route, and these folks came up with some brilliant, brilliant schedules and ideas, and the ferry system just went, nah, we can't do that. Boy, I just don't understand that at all. Yeah, Kevin.
Mm-hmm. I will say that some good news from the council meeting last night, where Justin Hirsch, who's on the Ferry Advisory Committee and does report to the council what's going on every month, said, you know, we have an open seat from Vashon. We have one more opportunity, you know, one more vacant seat to fill. And the good news was a person put their hand up and said, yeah, I'd be interested in that. And it turns out that the woman who did that is a transportation specialist, it turns out. So, you know, all the more power to those who are willing to serve. I know Kari Ulatowski was the woman who was on the board. Greg Beardsley, I believe, were the names of the folks when I first encountered the Ferry Advisory Committee. But good work and a shout out to them who are really helping us to be represented in that world.
And some good news on the other end, once you get to the other side, I understand that it is the West Seattle Bridge is slated to reopen in 2022, which now doesn't sound as far away as it once did.
It's almost like tomorrow.
About 10 days away, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. I didn't think when in 2022. It's a pretty big window.
Yes.
Well, the Vashon Theater just was awarded the John Spellman Award, which is an award given every year by King County and for culture to organizations in the county that are helping to preserve county heritage and buildings and museums, art galleries, those kind of things. So I think we can be quite proud of what Eileen and her family has done with the Vashon Theater. My question is, are we going to be able to keep the theater alive and well on Vashon?
Good question.
You know, I don't know about the workings of the interior workings of such things, but I can say that there is such a group of dedicated thespians, if you will, on the island. I don't think you could stop them if you wanted to. I think that we'll have theater on Vashon one way or the other, whether we have it housed or properly funded. I hope we do, but I think we'll have theater.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe if it's the COVID challenge, you know, we talked earlier about eventually that those systems tend to normalize themselves. But in the meantime, yeah, masks and vaccines. Yeah, I think the theater is going to be an institution on Vashon that's going to be here through my days on the island.
Good.
So Bruce, I will say that we're going to be making some Vashon news here next January, right, on the 19th.
Let's hope we don't make the news, but.
Well, we should let our listeners know that Bruce has kindly agreed to speak at the Indivisible Vashon meeting on January 19th at 7 p.m. You can actually register for that meeting right now if you go out to indivisiblevashon.org, and at the top of the page, there's the registration link. And Bruce and I have been collaborating for a discussion about our democracy and the historical perspective, which Bruce gives us inklings of every time we raise it here. But this is an opportunity for people to talk back and ask questions and interact with Bruce in a way that the radio show doesn't allow. So if you're keen on hearing more about democracy and where things are going and the arc of our democracy, Bruce Hallman will join us at the Indivisible Vashon meeting on January 19th, 7 p.m., which is a Wednesday night. I hope you'll sign up.
Great, thanks, I'll look forward to that, definitely.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
Unfortunately, I got my second jury duty call for the 19th, so I suspect I will be.
I think you've got a good excuse now. You gotta go.
Yeah, I gotta go to this meeting. There you go. Yeah.
Between the right. Meeting and your airplane, Truman.
There you go. Yeah.
let's move to state level sort of stuff. What's your read on Jay Inslee? Has he been a hero or a villain? Has he overstepped his authority, or has he been a good model for what a governor should do? What are the brieflies read on that?
He's a hero, a trend-setting hero.
Yeah, I couldn't. I agree. I think that, of course, he's going to get pushback because he is stepping out of, you know, from the confines of traditional roles. He's also these have been extraordinary times. I think he's stepped up. To me, he's definitely a hero, not only with regard to his handling of the COVID issue and the health issues, but also with regard to his concerns about the environment and protecting the Salish Sea and the environment as a whole.
We talked about leadership some time ago, particularly with the fire department chief, and the knowledge that Chief Krimmert had decided not to get vaccinated. And what did leadership look like? And leadership was pushing me into a decision that's mine to make. And at the time, what struck me as leadership is being willing to take a position that's maybe not popular, but you know in the end, or at least you have enough evidence and plenty of belief that in the end, it's really the right thing to do, even though it's not maybe the popular thing to do. And that's the hard part of leadership. And I think that Governor Inslee is not going to be right every time, right? But when we look back at the families who may have been lost, may have lost a loved one, it's hard to know who those families might be. But those families are going to be here, you know, because of some of the policies that the governor is enacting. So in that regard, I think that the everything he's doing is dedicated to those kind of positive outcomes. And I think we need to be bold and make those steps take place, you know, where we have the possibility to do so.
Right. And I think it's also important that, you know, that we stand behind him and let him know that and publicly support the governor. I think he's done a fantastic job on so many fronts. And it's easy when someone is getting a lot of heat to want to step away. And I think we need to step up instead.
Mm-hmm. Pretty resounding sort of vote of confidence in Governor Inslee's leadership from the brieflies. Truman, I haven't heard from you. What's your
well? It's a hard question. I don't know how to answer it. I like some of the stuff that he's done. He's put out these mandates. He's done it without the legislative support. But you know, like you said, Kevin, he's willing to stick his neck out and say, "Hey, this is what we have to do." So, you know, I mean, good on him. What else can you say?
Yeah. Well, good. Well, let's go to another hero villain sort of question about Joe Manchin, senator from West Virginia, who's sort of stalling the movement on the Biden Build Back Better Act. Is Joe Manchin a hero, a villain, a realist? How do the brieflies read what Manchin's doing? Yeah, Truman.
I heard something last night that I thought was pretty darned interesting. Everybody's concentrating on Manchin. And, you know, there's 50 Republicans in the Senate that are really having the effect. I mean, Manchin's, you know, just kind of the lightning rod for this. But maybe the pressure ought to be taken off of him and put back on the other 50, you know. So, mm-hmm. Just something to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. It's very problematic to me that a single person with deep ties to coal, both personally and politically, could stand in the way of our doing what is right and so very necessary going forward. So I like that thought. I'm not sure that Manchin is a Democrat. What is an animal that's half donkey and half elephant? A donkey? Donkey? I know which end of him is a donkey. I know that.
Shame on you.
we'll have to let that sit for a while.
Get this back on track, Kevin. Yeah.
I think that that I feel really comfortable commenting about Jay Inslee's villainous or heroic escapades. But I'm not a West Virginian, right? So it's a little harder for me to make a comment about Joe Manchin. The coal interests are one thing. West Virginia is not a wealthy state by any stretch of the imagination, right? They also receive an awful lot of, outsized federal taxation benefits. They have a senator who represents them, folks who oftentimes are struggling economically, who drives a Maserati. It's not really clear to me like how he relates, but Trump was able to relate to the working man by I guess wearing a red cap. Stranger things have happened. I agree with what Truman is saying. The commentary I've heard as well is, you know, you need to have more, more options in your game plan than trying to get one person or even, you know, two or three people to change their minds. You've got to find multiple paths to success. I think that we've already had an infrastructure bill that's passed, which has a lot of benefits for the nation. And this other Build Back Better framework, which I am totally with our Representative Jayapal, right, needs to be big because the country needs a lot of assistance. Even any step forward better than zero is better than nothing. So I do think that they have to find a path, and they should be making sure that they talk to both sides of the aisle.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, and one thing that struck me is, I mean, Manchin has indicated that he's willing to go along with a $1.75 billion bill, but not a $2.25 billion dollar
trillion.
Bill. Trillion, T with a T, yeah. Right? Trillion. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you're talking big numbers. And my question is, you know, does the perfect become the enemy of the good? You know, do we want a $2.5 trillion bill, or do we want a $1.75 trillion bill that's not all we want, but has a lot of what we want and what we need? And so, you know, it's really the nature of the legislative process. It's always a negotiations. And so have the sides become so locked in that they can't move and can't negotiate and can't find a common ground, the common ground that you're talking about, Kevin. And of course, focusing on the Republicans. I mean, you know that there's a number of Republicans out there who probably support the concepts of Build Back Better, but because of their sort of control by the Trump wing of the party, are afraid to speak up. And so will that break down at any point? Will we see compromise? Are we locked into this sort of us and them total sort of a gridlock? Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, it's really intriguing to watch how this is going to turn out. Of course, the countries, some of the countries at stake in terms of the investments that are needed to really help address some of the more egregious problems. But it's also the state of, I think, the political discourse and the political, the functioning of democracy, right? Mm-hmm. The words we hear are that both Manchin and Sinema, who are both in opposition in various measures, are receiving substantial donations from conservative interests. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, at some point, you think the logic would be that, you know, reduce the cost or take out a program, and eventually you get to where a Manchin and a Sinema are going to say, yeah, okay, this shirt fits me now. But if they're really catering to getting campaign donations, mm-hmm. you'd never get to the point. So I think that it's imperative, in one sense, let's start to do some trimming and see if we can get these two senators off the sidelines, or are they going to stay on the sidelines forever? And it just tells us about where our democracy is.
Yeah, such a good point, Kevin. Thank you for that. And really, Mr. Manchin received more campaign donations from oil, coal, and gas industries than any other senator in the current election cycle. So it doesn't take a genius to draw a direct line between his position and where he's received campaign contributions and his own. You know, he has a family-owned business that has made a small fortune selling waste coal from abandoned mines. And although it's in a blind trust, any general threat to coal power would significantly impact that business. So we have someone who is both personally and politically, and I mean by politically, I mean campaign donations from a very small sector of the economy, pushing very hard to stop this. And it's beyond frustrating to me that one person could stand in the way.
Well, that gets back to the whether or not our legislators can invest. And have, you know, private investments. I mean, they've talked about that. So, you know, it's like, well, how do you do that? How do you deal with that? You know, I agree. It's an incredible problem. But here's the main problem we have, folks, and that is that we are running out of time. And I think we're about done. So we'll see you guys all next week. And I hope you all have a wonderful Christmas.
Thank you, Bruce.
We'll see you then.
Thanks. Bye. Been a pleasure. Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone.